Welcome back here to X's and Bros on the Michigan Sports Network. Danica Halen, Brian Elke, Anthony Bellino, all joining you. Joining us now on the phone, as he does every Monday morning, is a part of our BetMGM Crosstalk, the play-by-play voice of the Detroit Tigers on Bally Sports Detroit, our good friend Matt Shepard. Shep, my friend, as always, thank you so much for taking the time. A very, very busy weekend for yourself and for the Tigers. How are you, my friend?
I'm doing great. How are you doing?
I'm well. I'm finally starting to feel a little bit better. It was a rough week, but we're making it through. We're surviving advance, just like the NCAA tournament, right? One day at a time. That's all we can kind of tell ourselves.
It's a good way to look at it, man.
Exactly.
A good way to look at it.
This got to rally and rebound a little bit. And the Tigers, they had to do a little bit of that throughout the week. They closed out two games on the road at Target Field against Minnesota, doing so in extra innings in one of those games on Tuesday. And then on Wednesday, a 17-14 absolute shootout. We'll get into that. So they take 2 out of 3 against Minnesota. Then they come home to Baltimore for Thursday through yesterday, and they split that series with Baltimore. Things were looking a little shaky through Saturday, but very good for this team, I think, to have another overall, just another strong week, another winning week. And I believe, if I'm not mistaken, they close out the month of July with a winning record.
Yeah, 3 straight months with a winning record for the first time since June, July, August of 2016. So, build, you know, and plus it's a team like Minnesota, where Target Field has been a problem for them. And they get the job done there. And as you mentioned, Baltimore, a couple of, you know, the close games that Detroit could have had, couldn't come up with a big hit because they went 0-16 with runners in scoring position in games 2 and 3, and then finding a way to get it done yesterday, split. And that's something that must have been wrong.
Yeah, you know, Shep, it was a big, I think that's very important for them. You didn't want to lose that series to Baltimore of all teams, you know, especially being at home where they have been so good at home of late, have the Tigers. So to be able to get that win on Sunday, 6-2, feels really good. Let's go back a little bit earlier in the week, though, to that 17-14, just offensive showcase of a game, and a game in which you'd think, you know, in today's modern baseball game, you'd think 17-14, well, the Tigers must have been hitting the ball over the field and hitting it out of the park and everywhere else, but they did so in a very much a Lions-Vikings type of score, but they manufactured these runs the old-fashioned way without being able to hit a home run in that game. And actually, Minnesota, I believe, hit, what, 7 in that contest? And it was...
Seven home runs. Yeah, 7 home runs.
Unbelievable. They hit 7 home runs, and they still lose that ball game. That's incredible. Tigers' offense was just rolling that day.
Yeah, never seen anything quite like it. You and I have talked about some unique moments in sports, and that was definitely one of them. Not many people have seen anything quite like that. The other thing about that, though, is, you know, he turns up 10-0 in a game like that. And not that you ever feel comfortable per se, but if you're going to have a situation where you feel like, all right, you can start playing for a run here or a run there, and you're going to innings all the time, then yeah, and yet they didn't necessarily feel comfortable lead like that. I don't know if it was really good hitting or if it was really bad pitching or if it's just one of those situations where those two teams know each other so well that it didn't really matter, and it's probably a combination of all of them, but it was one of the more unique ones. But the thing about that, though, maybe if you don't win that game and you're off 10-0, I don't know what it does to you the rest of the way. So fortunately, they got that victory and then came back the very next day and won game 1 of the series against Baltimore.
Yeah, if another team, they spot you 10 runs and you can't close that one out, everybody's going to be looking at themselves. I mean, even the fans are going to be looking at themselves like, what could I have done at home? You know, should I have kept the popcorn in a little bit longer? You know, we'd all be asking those sorts of questions. I have a question about just Miguel Cabrera, and he missed that go-ahead, you know, grand slam. The Tigers fell to the Orioles 4-3, and that snapped their 10-game home-winning streak that they were on. But Miggy dealing with this pressure as that number 500 gets closer and closer, and he actually talked about it and talked about, you know, how he's been able to trying to handle different things over the last couple of years and just be a better ball player and have better at bats. And you know that that's got to be mounting on him.
Yeah, I asked him the question. I asked him, you know, what kind of mental fatigue does it take on you as you try to reach these goals of 500 homers and he only needs 3 more? and 3,000 hits, and he continues to climb in the charts there. His next hit ties Frank Robinson for number 37 all time, and he admitted he used Simone Biles as an example, and how difficult it is. Miguel Cabrera has never been one of those guys, Anthony, who wants to talk about himself. He wants to talk about his teammates and some of the young guys on this team, but I thought that was a pretty revealing moment when he talked about that, yeah, the pressure can get to everybody at times, and you've got to be able to stay within yourself. You've got to be able to, you know, do what you do best, and the home runs will come, the hits will come, but you got to go about doing it for yourself and being yourself if you want to accomplish the goal.
And Shep, I think it's something that's very unique for a person like Miguel Cabrera, who, as you get older and as you are playing this young man's game, you know, he knows where he is at in comparison to where he used to be, right? I mean, he can feel the difference in his own body year after year. Sure. And some of the injuries and some of those things where those types of frustrations can begin to mount on you, where, you know, that old saying, I'm not as good as I once was. But it's very difficult when you're talking about like the apex, alpha, professional athlete who realizes that, hey, I can't do things that I used to be able to do. Factor that in with the milestones and all the fans and everybody looking and watching and counting. It's a pressure that we, the man in the arena, the quote, the story there, it's something that we can't relate to. We can only kind of watch it sort of unfold on television.
Everybody goes through it. Every great athlete goes through this. And that's the hard part, because he's 38. He's not 28 anymore. He's not 18 anymore. So, we asked him the question, if he remembered his first home run, what you remember most? And he said, I'm about 40 pounds lighter, right? I mean, that's just the way it works and evolves in sports. But the thing about, I would say this about him, the thing about him is that he has been really good the last 2 months. You know, there's so many people who look at him and think, oh, all he's doing is hitting singles and so on and so forth. That ball you referred to that traveled, I mean, Mullins caught it right at the wall. The wall's 420. Statcast had it at 422. I don't know how that's possible. If it's 422, it would have been over the wall. But, it was about a foot and a half, 2 feet shy of the wall. That's a home run in 27 other baseball parks in Major League Baseball. Think about that for a minute. So think of how many more, and I'm not taking anything away from Comerica Park. We all love it. I'm sure it's aided him in some, but he's not hitting a guaranteed rate field. If he's hitting a guaranteed rate field or Yankee Stadium, that ball and a lot of other ones, he's already at 500, man. But for the most part, this is a guy who has been, over the last 2 months, zoned in pretty well and been really good in the middle of the lineup. Whether he's got, the amount of home runs people think he should have or not, he still supplies some really good at-bats. He still supplies some key unselfish at-bats where he's going the other way and making sure he's getting sacrifice flies. People need to understand those types of situations in baseball a little bit better. He did it yesterday, a sacrifice fly, right field, an unselfish at-bat, and it gets a really important run home from third in a sacrifice fly situation. There's too many times where you think every time that guy or home run hitters of the past need to hit home runs. Well, there's nothing wrong with doing what's best for your team and what your team needs more than anything else, and he's done it a lot over the last couple of months.
Yes, he has. It's sort of like the evolution, if you will. And he's, after a little bit of a slow start, he's been able to put his bat on the ball. He's, hitting singles. He's making good, good plays. And at the end of the day,
he's in the wall hard. Here's what happens, in especially in baseball. Strikeout pitchers, right, or highly thought of youngsters, we think need to be strikeout guys. So if Casey Mize has only got 3 strikeouts, well, guess what? Casey Mize is pitching to contact a lot more right now. And the reason he's doing that, and he has the ability to do that, he wants to go deeper in games. So it doesn't make any sense for a guy to throw 111, 115 pitches and boast 11 strikeouts if he's not going to be able to make it through the ballgame. Casey Mize wants to go deeper in games. And if that means I only get 4 strikeouts, but I only surrender 3 hits, and I'm letting my defense stay active, there's nothing wrong with that. I think that's an unselfish, and I think it's a smart approach. The same thing with Miguel Cabrera. He doesn't have to hit home runs to impress you. If you know the game of baseball and you follow it well enough, he's doing some little things that also really help his team, and he's having a lot of fun doing it. And he loves, absolutely loves, and embraces the opportunity to talk with pitchers like Casey Mize and Tarek Skubal and Matt Manning, and then the younger players like Akil Baddoo, for example, and Derek Hill, and helping them learn the game a little bit better. There's a key thing that A.J. Hinch does with his guys, and I was watching it yesterday. Derek Hill is in the same hitting group as Miguel Cabrera. There's a reason for that, all right? And Derek Hill's done a better job of going the other way, but a lot of guys who are in that hitting group with Miguel Cabrera, and then there may be another hitting group with Robbie Grossman or Jonathan Scope. And the reason they do that is so you get some of these young guys understanding what it takes to be a true pro and be able to use all the field.
By the way, Matt Shepard, one of the guys that, you know, you talk about, you know, unselfish. I'd like to throw Robbie Grossman's name out there. I thought he had a really, really good game yesterday. And, you know, you look at the plate appearance in which, you know, he ends up drawing a walk to get on base and got down early. Just battled back. You know, he fouled a couple off, but he was just in there battling the entire at bat. And it's like this Robbie Grossman guy just continues to impress week after week.
Yeah, you know, people look at his batting average, and that's very narrow-minded. Maybe. I mean, you've got to look at his on-base percentage, where it is. He's already had career highs in home runs with 16, career highs in stolen bases, career highs in RBIs, career highs in walks, and he's going to have a career high in hits as well. He's got 70 walks. Now, only Joey Gallo has more walks than Robbie Grossman, and a lot of people may shrug their shoulders and say, that's not a big deal. That was a really big deal in the first inning. When there are two out and he works the walk, and suddenly you extend the line a little bit and get to the middle of the order, and here's the other thing that he does well. He sees a lot of pitches. He sees 4.43 pitches per plate appearance. That helps everybody else. I can't tell you how many players I've talked to where they're on deck or they're in the dugout, they're watching Robbie Grossman's approach, and even if he makes an out, he's on his way back to the dugout. By the time he hits that top step, what is he doing? He's telling everybody else what this guy's got. The reason he can do that is because he sees so many pitches in his plate appearance, and it helps everybody else.
That guy just saw 40 pitches. He'll be able to tell you exactly what that pitcher's bringing to the table. Speaking of pitchers, we had a celebrity guest pitcher the other day take the mound. That would be the Pistons' number one overall draft pick, the 1-1 himself, Mr. Cade Cunningham. You know, he was out there in the field with the new draft class. And what was that scene like to watch Cade throw out that first pitch? I feel like you could just feel the energy and feel the juice and people just excited about Detroit basketball.
Yeah, it was very similar to when he was in town not too long ago for a workout with the Pistons, came down to a Tigers game, and people started recognizing that he was there. We had a shot of him in the suite, and I think there were a lot of younger fans outside recognizing him and asking for pictures of, you know, the city of Detroit. I think the entire state of Michigan, all Piston fans embracing that choice and really excited that he was there. And I thought he said all the right things. Now, you know, I didn't really see his press conference, but he joined our talent on Valley Sports, and he said all the right things, wearing number two, the reason he's wearing it, the honoring of Chuck Daly, number one, and number two, the fact that he wants to really be a great player for the Detroit Pistons. And I think it's great when you see, these draft picks and these coaches, Pistons, Red Wings, college coaches, coming to the ballpark and supporting the Tigers, because A.J. Hinch has made mention of it more than once. It's important that they all support one another because we're all rooting for Detroit sports right now.
Yeah, I love it. I love that the organizations are always putting out, you know, different graphics on Twitter and welcoming things and acknowledging things. And I just like when, you know, all four are, like you said, they're rooting for each other. Everybody's pulling for one another. Daniel Norris was really the only name at the deadline, and a very active deadline across Major League Baseball. I think I saw something where 27 different teams had made a move, including the Chicago Cubs, which basically they moved their entire roster.
I think every team made at least one move. And I think there were somewhere in the neighborhood of 5 to 7 teams that are in the playoff hunt acquired at least one all-star. I've never seen anything like it. I asked Al Avila about that and A.J. Hinch. Neither one have ever really seeing anything like it. It's not necessarily about the number of moves. It's the people who are being moved. It's Joey Gallo. It's Anthony Rizzo. It's Max Scherzer. It's Trey Turner. It's players of that ilk who are on the move to different teams. A.J. Hinch, I thought, said it best. You really recognize the number of teams that decided, you know what, we're in. We're going to go for it. And there are as many now as we have seen in a long time. It's crazy that what that first move, if you look at Nelson Cruz to Tampa, if you want to believe that's the first move, maybe some people think it might be an Adam Frazier going from Pittsburgh and on the move to the Chicago White Sox. Not sure what you consider it, but so many different teams, just because it's the trade deadline, the last day, doesn't mean that, you know, you won necessarily the day. I thought the move that Tampa made by getting Nelson Cruz early was really important, but the number of quality players shifting sites was, you know, alarming to me. And then, as you started to say, when you get the Chicago Cubs and the Washington Nationals basically burning them down and starting all over, it is really surprising.
Yeah, very, very much so. And I was just going to say, with, you know, Daniel Norris being that that name that moves, you know, your hats off to him. Best of luck in Milwaukee. Hopefully it works out. But I was really okay, and we had talked about this all week, that if the Tigers didn't make a move, if they just hold fast right where they're at, right where this lineup in this roster is at right now, that I was okay with that. Didn't think that they needed to necessarily go out and buy, and I don't think anybody was rooting for that. Didn't think that they needed to sell in regards to what A.J. Hinch had said earlier. Like, look, if you want one of our guys, you got to pay. So if there's nothing, you know, if there wasn't a deal out there that was really that satisfying where, you know, they were going to try to pull one of the bigger names off of this roster, I was perfectly fine with the Tigers basically kind of remaining idle at the deadline.
Yeah, I'm with you. I thought a lot of people, at least Tigers fans, kind of were overvaluing their guys, thinking, you know what, this guy would be a really good fit here, this guy would be a really good fit there. I kept saying, I'm not sure what you're thinking there. You know, I mean, Jonathan Schoop, for example, he's going to be a free agent at the end of the year, and he's going to want more than a one-year deal. And what exactly were you going to get for him? I forget what Chicago gave up for Cesar Hernandez. You know, Schoop, some people feel, might have been a good fit in Boston at their first base position. But I don't think that the Tigers were receiving a lot of phone calls in that regard. I thought the most marketable guy might have been a guy like Jose Cisnero, power arm out of the bullpen, can log some innings, can go back-to-back games, is a very durable and reliable reliever, but glad that the Tigers were able to hold on to him for the rest of the season.
He is Matt Shepard, play-by-play voice of the Detroit Tigers on Bally Sports Detroit. Off day today. They'll begin the first of three against the Boston Red Sox tomorrow at 7:10, followed up by the road trip to Cleveland to take on the Indians over the weekend. Shep, my friend, as always, thank you so much for your time today. Enjoy the off night, and we'll talk to you next week.
Sounds good, AB. Have a good one, buddy.